Actor George Takei is a man who needs very little introduction. He first rose to fame as young Sulu in the original Star Trek series, but since then, he has become an active voice in promoting equal rights for LGBT people.
Anytime you need to say the word gay, you can simply say Takei. For example, you could safely proclaim you are a supporter of Takei marriage. If you're in a more festive mood, you can march in a Takei pride parade.
It's okay to be Takei. It's okay to be Takei.
Allegiance is a play inspired by George's experiences in U.S. internment camps during World War II when scores of Japanese Americans were imprisoned. That movie hits theaters next week, including 8 in the Metro Atlanta area. With me now to talk about the play and his life as an actor is George Takei. Welcome.
Good to be here.
I wonder how far you are now from where you thought you'd be when you were in your 20s.
Actually, in my 20s, I imagined myself being a leading man in major feature productions. I reached for the high star.
But did you ever imagine that you would be in this position as a cultural icon, as a leader, not just in LGBT rights, but also at this point for refugees and the treatment of American citizens and civil rights?
Absolutely. And on the Broadway stage with a musical that is inspired by the internment of Japanese Americans. I never dreamed of that, and I was able to achieve that with Allegiance, which is going to be screened on a very significant date, February 19th. And it was on that date, 75 years ago, that President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed an executive order numbered 9066, which ordered all Japanese Americans on the West Coast. I was a 5-year-old child, but I was included in that, to be summarily rounded up with no charges, no trial, no due process, in the most unjust way, to be rounded up and imprisoned in these barbed wire prison camps simply because we happen to look like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor.
Many Americans think that could never happen today, right? But we're talking about an executive order that was upheld by the Supreme Court. Do you feel as though that kind of thing could happen? Is it possible to see history repeating itself even in 2017?
We are saying that just a few weeks after our current president, Donald Trump, signed another executive order on January 27th, which incidentally happens to be the Holocaust Remembrance Day. He signed an executive order with a sweeping statement characterizing Muslims coming from 7 Muslim-majority nations as potential terrorists. So again, the echoes of that unjust incarceration that began in 1942 is being felt in reality today.
You know, I was just in the hair salon yesterday, and my stylist said, you know, I've never even heard about that. What are you talking about? What are they called, internment camps? How did we lose this history, which seems to be pretty important when we talk about the American democracy? Why do so many people not know about it?
It is still a little known and even less understood chapter of American history. I'm always shocked when I tell people, particularly in the Midwest and the East Coast, that I was in prison during my childhood simply because of my ancestry. It was my grandparents on both sides that immigrated here. My mother was born in Sacramento, California, the capital of California. My father was a San Franciscan. They met and married in Los Angeles, and my siblings and I were born in Los Angeles. We're Americans, and yet, because of our ancestry, we were put into these camps. It happened, and Americans don't know because of phrases like Japanese internment camp. It pushes it to a foreign country.
Meaning it sounds like they were internment camps in Japan.
In Japan, run by the Japanese government. They were American camps, U.S. government-operated camps in the United States, imprisoning American citizens who happened to be of Japanese ancestry. And it's so important for us to know about that. But it's You know, my mission in life has been to raise the awareness. But when I'm always confronted with that phrase, Japanese internment camp, I have to go through that whole history all over again. You know, because it sounds something distant, something isolated, not American. They were Americans, camps in the United States, in places like Arkansas, Arizona, Montana, Utah. That's America.
There were many Japanese Americans who lost their property, lost their businesses when they came back.
My family, my parents, my father lost his business, our home, our freedom, and we were put in these camps and impoverished. We were imprisoned for the duration of the war, 4 years. And when the war ended, as suddenly as they rounded us up, the gates were thrown open. We were free to go.
No compensation.
Well, at that time, we were given a one-way ticket to wherever in the United States we wanted to go to, and $25. We were supposed to start life all over again. And my brother was 7. My baby sister, who wasn't even a year old when we were in prison.
She was born in the,
her whole life, practically. She was 5 years old. Her
How
whole
do
life.
You come out of that, though, and not hold resentment for your country?
Well, when I became a teenager, I became a voracious reader. I read everything, particularly civics books and history books. I became fascinated with that. And I was taken by the noble ideals of our democracy. All men are created equal, endowed with an inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I couldn't quite reconcile that with what I knew to be my childhood imprisonment. And so I had many long and sometimes heated discussions after dinner with my father. And I learned about American democracy from a man who lost everything in the middle of his life, that he had worked for. And he said to me, "I'll show you how it works." And the following Sunday afternoon, he took me downtown to the Adlai Stevenson for President campaign headquarters. And he introduced me to how our democracy has to work. People, passionate people who are dedicated to getting a good man elected president of the United States. And so I was taken by that. And I was there almost every night after school and on weekends, working with them. Governor Stevenson of Illinois did not win. General Eisenhower did. But my father said, in a democracy, you never give up. You keep on keeping on.
The constant complaint you hear whenever someone who is in the performing arts speaks about politics is, why are we listening to this person? That person's just an actor. That person's just a singer. What do you say to especially politicians who constantly say that actors and performing artists shouldn't have a voice in politics?
Are they telling us that our citizenship as Americans ended when we made that decision to become an actor or a singer? It's even more important for those of us who have been blessed with the amplification of our voices that our careers give us. Those of us who have been blessed with this
influence,
the additional amplification of our voice, have a real responsibility to know what we're talking about. And I, as a child, experienced it. And as a teenager growing up, I experienced it when we first came out, and I started school back in Los Angeles. I had a teacher who constantly called me the Jap boy or the little Jap boy. That stung. What had I done to that old lady? I knew that she hated me. She ignored me when I raised my hand, so I quit raising my hand. But why did she hate me so much? She was a teacher. I was her student. But that was what we came, in quotes, home to. Our home was Skid Row.
So I wonder what differences you see. I mean, obviously, you were quite young when you were in the American internment camps. But when you compare that to what's happening now, you're obviously opposed to the travel ban that was...
Absolutely. It's that sweeping characterization of a whole group of people, you know, which is... Because we simply looked like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor. It was crazy. We were neither the enemy nor aliens. We were born in this country, raised in this country. That kind of irrationality, and that kind, the same kind of irrationality is happening now, as we're discovering when these people who were banned but with the stay are coming to this country. People who fought for this country, grandmas, are being reunited with their families. These aren't people that are dangerous.
So most politicians have pretty low approval ratings. You, on the other hand, have very high approval ratings.
Are you trying to get me to run for office?
Why have you never
Why
run for office?
Why are you going to curse me that way?
Ronald Reagan, there have been Donald Schwarzenegger, you know, Sonny Bono.
You know, Ronald Reagan, to his credit, in 1988, apologized for that imprisonment and paid a $20,000 token redress to all survivors who were alive at that point in 1988. This was something extraordinary for me. It proved to me that this country is big enough and confident enough to admit a mistake when they made it, much too late, more than four decades. And my father, who bore the burden of the imprisonment the most in our family, passed without ever knowing. He died in 1979, 9 years before Reagan's apology. And that token redress, $20,000, paid to all the surviving survivors at that time, totaled up to $1.6 billion. And that's the kind of penalty, consequence, that Donald Trump is talking about by this kind of thoughtless, reckless, sloppily executed executive order.
Actor George Takei, a play inspired by his experiences in the internment camps in the U.S., is called Allegiance, and it hits theaters in the Atlanta area next week. It's such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm actually sorry that all these decades later, you're still having to talk about this.
Well, but it's important. It's important that we do that. And thank you for giving me that opportunity to do that.